The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The same substances that can trigger hay fever may also worsen asthma symptoms. It's a concern for many people at this time of year. So to answer all your asthma-related questions, our expert today is Professor Marcus Butler, Medical Director of the Asthma Society of Ireland. Marcus, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Good morning to listeners.
Let's clarify something first. Can you have asthma without hay fever and hay fever without any asthma?
You absolutely can. Certainly you can. However, the majority of asthma is allergy mediated or triggered by asthma, by allergy. And of course, hay fever is the most commonly encountered such allergic condition. The two are intrinsically related and often go hand in hand.
Now, the symptoms of your hay fever, which may, I suppose, create problems with your asthma.
So hay fever will typically cause sneezing and itchiness and runniness in the nose and even congestion or blockage. But it can also have more bothersome symptoms. It can interfere with productivity. It can cause sleep complaints, absenteeism from work, and even showing up and then just presenteeism and not really delivering on the work front. And it can also very much be the case that you get triggering of your asthma. And we know that allergic rhinitis can trigger hospitalizations from asthma if it's not looked after as an important comorbidity.
Now, if you get hay fever with or without asthma, how debilitating is it? I mean, people just think it's a few harmless sneezes.
The majority of people just get on with it and put up with it. And a lot of people, in fact, if they knew that they could have a symptom-free life, are missing out on a better quality of life, but accept it as it is. And there's a wealth of international evidence, scientific guidelines about the correct treatment of hay fever. And certainly it's worth talking to your healthcare provider about this. I mean, avoiding the allergen is always a good idea, but we'd live very cloistered existence in a hermited way if we didn't get out and about. So it's important to be able to balance protective measures as well as using the correct medications in the right way to avoid side effects or problems from the medications themselves.
Can you reduce your sensitivity to an allergen?
Absolutely, you can over time. And one of the treatments that can be discussed when you talk with your healthcare providers is the concept of immunotherapy for hay fever, for example, which is triggered by grass pollen causing this inflammation. And you can train the immune system over a number of years to react in a better way. And it can also, in fact, keep the symptoms from returning once you finish a three-year course of this treatment. We prefer to usually, as a non full-time allergists who in the past allergists used to give injections of this type of treatment, and they were effective, but they also carried a slightly higher rate of risk and they were often unstandardized. But now the EMA and the FDA are very happy to approve forms of these medications that are given under the tongue as sublingual, we call it, immunotherapy, which is taken ideally at least 4 months before the start of the hay fever season. I can then take and you take it on a daily basis under the tongue for a period of 3 years. It's difficult to adhere to that, but the payoff is that in the very first year, you'll notice less symptoms. You shouldn't stick with it if you don't notice less symptoms in the first season.
So you don't have to take it 12 months of the year. You take it at the beginning, if you like, of the hay fever season and do it under the tongue for that period.
But no, we would recommend taking it for a full continuous three-year period, starting 4 months before the start of the season to get the best impact. Okay. But you will even get some improvements if you leave it as late as about 2 months before the start of the season.
Mm. Now, when you said that the injections had certain risks, what were those risks?
Well, I mean, the extreme risk was of anaphylaxis and death from severe allergic, life-threatening allergic reactions. This hasn't been known to happen for slit. The tablet version doesn't have the ability to kill people, the best of our records, but of our knowledge, but it can rarely cause anaphylaxis type symptoms. So it does need to be done under the medical supervision of somebody trained in managing allergy conditions.
Now, there is whether it's an old wives' tale or a young wives' tale, it's about if you eat honey from plants that the bees have been attending locally, local honey, in other words, it mitigates. Is that true?
Unfortunately, that's a good example of a number of interventions that may have advantage, but we just don't know well enough to be able
to give it a recommend. Trying to find local honey may be a challenge, unless you actually have hives yourself.
Yeah, and another example of those sort of things would be salt therapies and salt chambers. These are all things that may, at an individual level, help somebody, but they often don't. And we don't know enough about potential harms either, so we can't really recommend them the way we know what we can expect with certain medications that we do recommend.
Now, when you're talking about allergens, we're talking about pollen in the outdoors, so obviously if you stay indoors, you might avoid them. But there are allergens indoors that are going
absolutely,
to get you.
Absolutely, Pat. And so seasonal allergic rhinitis from hay fever. The other form of intermittent rhinitis that's very, very common is from pets. And you'll get meet those pets' allergens in the greatest quantities indoors, so your cats or dogs. It's useful to pre-medicate with an antihistamine, you know, 2 to 5 hours before you encounter a friend's cat or a neighbour's cat if they don't live in your house, and you know that you're allergic to such an animal. But all-round allergy is the most common allergen indoors, house dust mite, which is everywhere humans go and in this part of the world. And that's why it's important to recognise, diagnose it and treat it with medicines.
Now, some of the questions flying in. Is there any correlation between allergies and autoimmune disease, say psoriasis? Also, is hay fever and allergy considerably higher or stronger this year than before?
So the first one, there's no strong link between hay fever and the skin disease psoriasis, though it is actually strongly linked to eczema or atopic dermatitis. And the hay fever seasons are starting it slightly earlier, and because of the change in climate that we're seeing, we have longer, warmer weather, which is conducive to a prolonged hay fever season.
So it may appear to be more strong because it's simply longer lasting.
Correct.
My kids get nosebleeds when they have hay fever. Is this common? Will they grow out of it? Can you take antihistamine indefinitely?
So nosebleeding is not a typical symptom of hay fever. And the most common reason that nosebleeds happen actually in children is nose picking, which is an unpleasant thing to talk about. But the medications also used to treat hay fever can cause nosebleeds and would be the most common reason we see nosebleeds. And it's just by not using the nasal spray in the correct manner. When it enters the nostril, it should be aiming towards the inner corner of the eye on the same side as the nostril it has entered.
Okay.
And we say a mantra that when you spray your nose, look at your toes. So you have your head tilted down, chin tucked in, looking at the floor, and you just lightly sniff in the medication into the nose.
I've had hay fever all my life, triggered by dander, dust, even by eating. Over time, I've found sinus problems also increasing. I visited a new doctor with a respiratory issue recently, and they asked repeatedly, have I ever been diagnosed with asthma? Could I actually have developed asthma later in life?
Well, it's good to always have a suspicion for asthma, as that doctor has rightly done, because the two go hand in hand. There's a very high rate, much higher rate than you'd expect to see asthma present in people who also have nose and sinus complaints. And while hay fever is one form of nose condition, sinusitis disease and chronic or long-term sinus congestion is extremely common, where there's thicker mucus often. You may get a loss of sense of smell or very blockage or pressure sensation in the head. And it's important, again, to get this correctly diagnosed because it does improve a correct treatment.
I broke out with a rash a few weeks ago. Like nettle stings, I was put on an antihistamine, also very tired, but couldn't pinpoint what caused the whole thing. That's from Anne.
So that sounds quite like a form of urticaria, which would be a typical IgE-mediated allergic reaction. It shares some of the biology of what happens in hay fever. And the starting point there would be to see your GP, or if you have access to get to a dermatologist, to ask about this.
Another one. I was always on Ventolin for my asthma. Most recently, I was switched to Symbicort as my breathing had got a little more restrictive. It is very effective, but also very expensive. Not sure if it's something that I will be on long term or if it's just an interim solution.
So these are examples of their brand names. I won't talk further about them, but the original blue inhaler is not the preferred treatment now for asthma when one treatment is given to a patient, for the simple reason that it doesn't address the inflammation or swelling that poses the greatest hazard to those patients, including a risk of death. The medication that was mentioned is actually the first line type of medication we now recommend as a reliever for asthma, which is an inhaled steroid and a long acting bronchodilator drug, which is best used in what's termed a maintenance and reliever therapy, where you take it every day religiously as a maintenance, but you also top up with it for relief.
Can you ask, is it possible to get hay fever at the age of 61? Never had it before, so I'm very surprised. I did test for COVID, but it turned out not to be COVID. All the symptoms I have therefore point to hay fever.
Absolutely. It can be the case. As with any condition where it's causing worry, there are other things that can do this too. So it's wise to get the hay fever just confirmed. A simple skin test for allergy or a blood test that's easily ordered by a GP can confirm the presence of allergic sensitization to not only grass pollen, but tree pollen and weed pollen. And as I said, there are treatments that are effective, starting with as when I needed antihistamine in tablet, or even more effective in spray in the nose form. But for more significant symptoms that are troubling a patient, they really should be on an intranasal anti-inflammation treatment, which contains a safe form of steroid. And that's by far and away the most recommended treatment. And it's the safest for the body. It avoids more significant steroid side effects that could happen from other routes of delivery.
Jarlath says, I occasionally cough up a web-like lump of white phlegm. Is this usual? I have mild cold asthma.
So that is a very common symptom. In asthma is often thought of just as a wheezing condition, but it is a disease that also is associated with mucus hypersecretion or overproduction of mucus, which often takes the form of little plugs or nuggets that can alarm a patient when it's coughed up. And it just is important to have an annual review with your GP. Make sure your asthma symptoms are not intruding into your life and that they're correctly treated. It shouldn't be seen as a series of unrelated events. It's a long-term condition that needs daily management for the best results.
From Jerry in Sligo, when I was a child, I had allergies to a lot of animals and to dust, heavy enough. I went for a series of injections. It might have been one, but he remembers the injection. All I remember is that I had to stay indoors for 2 days after it and was told it may cause a temporary lump on my arm like an egg. Any idea what it might have been and does it work?
There was a practice many, many years ago of injecting a depot injection of a long-acting steroid medication. This has fallen out of favour because of the potential for steroid-related side effects that are not insignificant over time. So it's best avoiding that sort of treatment has stopped for quite some time. But we avoid tablet steroids for the same reason. It can cause reduced bone density disease called osteoporosis. It can cause vision loss, which is a condition called cataracts.
My goodness.
Can cause weakness and bruising of the skin. And it can interfere with diabetes care. And there's lots of reasons why tablet steroids and injection steroids like that gentleman is describing are not optimum treatment in 2024.
Now, the question is, people will normally go to their GP for these complaints. Do GPs, do they have enough kind of expertise to handle most of the people who come to see them, or do they need to go to see a specialist?
No, absolutely they would. I mean, this is bread and butter for a GP. Hay fever, allergic rhinitis, give its fancy name, is something that they will see so much of. Between 10 to 30% of the population is affected by hay fever.
So they see it every day.
They see it every season. It's people are coming in complaining of the symptoms. So the diagnosis needs to be made often and are just optimising the treatment for stubborn disease.
And the message is there is help out there.
Absolutely.
It is available, the right treatments.
The asthma advice line is available, which gives a good chance to talk to a nurse if you phone 1800 44 54 64. And there's also a WhatsApp text message service provided by asthma.ie who can give expert advice in all matters related to hay fever and asthma.
Okay, so asthma.ie is the website, and you can get all the details of the help that's available, or 1800 44 54 64. Professor Marcus Butler, Medical Director of the Asthma Society of Ireland, thank you very much for helping us on this Monday.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.